and welcome to episode 376 of the Critical Myth Podcast. I am Edmund from Greenville, your temporary fill-in host while John is off in the wilds of Canada. And tonight we have with us...
Woof, 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 woof. This is Brunson from Australia.
Oh, good. Okay, the spell must have kicked in, and I've got to say, I didn't know Bear had so much range. It's really hard doing comedy, but as you can guess from that, it is just the two of us this evening. John is off, I think, trying to get Republic of Doyle distribution in the U.S. He's been spending so much time in the Maritime Provinces, he just thinks they need more representation south of the border. So while he's off doing that, it is just the two of us holding down the fort, and we'll be discussing Supernatural, as you might have guessed, also Person of Interest, and then finish up with a little bit of Arrow. But before we do that, there's something that I normally do that I can't quite seem to remember what it is. Could you help me out, Bronstham?
I'll give it my best. Basically, the discussions that you're about to hear are going to be completely spoiler-filled. We've waited about a week to talk about these episodes to give you guys all a chance to catch up, and that means that when we dig into the episodes, we're really going to dig into the episodes. So, hopefully that covers everything.
Absolutely.
And there isn't some disclaimer about, you know, attack pterodactyls that I keep shooting at by accident.
No, not this time, I hope. Although maybe a few attack dogs. But let's just launch into things, starting with Supernatural, and here is the promo.
Next Tuesday.
Oh!
To stop an animal.
The Colonel's not a suspect.
Maybe he's a witness.
Dean will have to become one.
When you mind meld with an animal, you start exhibiting some of its behavior.
Hey! You!
Supernatural, all new next Tuesday, 9, 8 central on the CW.
And that would be Supernatural episode season 9, episode 5, Dog Dean Afternoon. Sam and Dean investigate two gruesome murders and realize that a German Shepherd witnessed both deaths, so they use a spell that allows Dean to communicate with the dog. Unfortunately, the spell comes with unexpected side effects, and As the previously on made clear, they were definitely linking this to the other sort of more wackier off the cuff episodes, just to get us in the mood. And Bronze Thumb, since you're the one here who's actually seen all 9 seasons, why don't you start us off on this one?
Yeah, this one's not one of the best. it's a case of them basically hanging an entire script off of a single idea that couldn't support it. I mean, it's a funny idea. Hey, what if Dean could talk to animals?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's kind of funny and interesting, but it's an act breaks worth of stuff. That's a one bit comedy thing, and they tried to do a whole episode about it. And yeah, not even. I mean, Jensen Ackles was trying really hard, you could tell, and he was funny in places, but there was just not enough. There was no substance to the episode. And then on top of that, it's just you've got a woefully miscast guest actor. I really like Steve Valentine. He's an actor that's been in a ton of things, and they gave him nothing to work with.
Yeah.
He's going to eat animal bits, cars. Is how it felt the entire way through. And then on top of that is more of the over-the-top Ezekiel hinting. I feel like Sam's smart enough to have cottoned on by this point. And having him continue to not is... like, it's disappointing. It's a disservice to a character who's supposed to be really quite intelligent.
Yeah.
So I was disappointed.
Yeah, no, I'd have to agree with you on a lot of that. I mean, as I'll just start with the last bit, because that's actually what is annoying me more. And I think certainly given John's comments on the previous episodes, I'm sure it's getting to him too. But, certainly of the two brothers, you know, I mean, Sam's the one who, is the studious one and likes hitting the books and, and doing the research. And, Dean is more the action-oriented of the pair, and to have him just sort of continue to be clueless really doesn't make sense. And And certainly I agree with the you know, with the way they handled this idea of Dean being a dog. It you know, it was like they sort of had, you know, had a few jokes. I mean, there was, you know, Dean playing fetch. I mean, I did kind of like that at the beginning, and was sort of hoping they would continue in that same vein. But you know, no, it just wound up, yeah, I mean, kind of being, you know, the latest iteration of Dr. Doolittle. And you know, it seems each time you do Dr. Doolittle, it gets just a little bit less interesting. And certainly with the, yeah, I wasn't, you know, being the well, now relative newbie to the show, with the villain, it, you know, I wasn't sure if this was, you know, some iteration of Demon or something that I hadn't seen. And, yeah, then it wind up being a guy who just has cancer and, you know, is happens to be a chef and figures out a way to battle it using, you know, shamanistic practices. Just, you know, felt like a, you know, a kind of weak villain in the midst of, you know, the other stuff they've been setting up. So, you know, this was just yeah, and you know, an episode that felt very slight, and you know, and certainly wasn't doing much in terms of driving the overall season forward. And you know, as I've said all along, it was, you know, I was fine with the whole Ezekiel thing. If they were using it to be really obvious and have Sam Cotton on, but at this point it just seems like, you know, no, he is just there to be the, you know. Angel Ex Machina inside Sam. And you know, I would think that they would start giving more hints by now if they really had something other than that planned. And you know, because I mean, I've been thinking about it, I've been speculating about, you know, the whole thing of driving Castiel out. And you know, okay, he came on seeming like he's a you know, he is the one good angel out there, you know, but or is this just the, you know, the ultimate mole and double cross? And you know, with all the warding that was going on, they figured, you know, this is the one way the angels figured out that they could actually get into the bunker. And you know, but unfortunately, the way they've been playing things so far, I'm not sure we're going to get anything quite that subtle or interesting. but yeah, I certainly agree. This was not the strongest outing of the season.
I really hope that this is going to turn out much like season 8 did, where in the first half of the season there's a couple of story arcs in play that ultimately go nowhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, on one hand, that was obviously not very good because half the season just, you know, I completely forgot about it up to this point.
Yep.
But then they got to about the halfway mark, and they did what they'd been doing, and they got into some really good, really interesting storytelling. And I really hope that this isn't what they intend to do for the whole season.
Yeah, definitely. And it even seems odd to me. And, you know, I guess I'm thinking about it in the overall scheme. I mean, yeah, we are, you know, sort of just at episode 5. I kind of feel like, you know, they've got these big things that they've set up that are still staying on the sidelines, with, you know, the angels on one side and Abaddon, and you know, what may or may not be going on in hell with Crowley locked up. It feels like they're, you know, they're either just holding those in their back pocket, and I hope they don't do it for too long, you know, or, you know, or worse, if they're not, they've set stuff up and they're not quite sure where they're going with it. But you know, I think, you know, certainly the whole idea with Jeremy Carver coming back in was, you know, that he had this plan for, you know, this is the second of 3 seasons. So you know, yeah, I mean, not the strongest outing so far, but you know, it is still early, so I have hopes of them bringing it back around. But now, yeah, John did give this a 6 out of 10. What would you give it, Bronze Thumb?
Yeah, I'd agree. There's nothing that really elevates this episode over, you know, bog average, and it's really only some good turns from Jensen Ackles here, and that keeps it from going even lower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. That yeah, it's certainly below average, so a 6. And we will keep our fingers crossed that they start showing more promise in the next few episodes here. So we will move on to hopefully something a little more enjoyable, and that would be Person of Interest. And here's the promo for that.
Ready? I think so. Yes.
CBS Next Tuesday.
Now you continue to feel calmer and more at rest.
This therapist hypnotizes his clients out of millions.
Better watch his back.
But the con game is over.
Wait. Who are you?
The Night Watch.
A new Person of Interest. CBS Next Tuesday.
And that is Person of Interest, Season 3, Episode 7, The Perfect Mark. The team keeps tabs on a hypnotherapist whose number has come up. Elsewhere, Carter goes after an antique dealer who has an HR connection. And I guess I will lead off on this one as I've been writing the reviews. And this one thing I found interesting about this episode is, you know, we've talked about sort of the denser storytelling they've been using, and this seemed like a perfect example of it. In the previous seasons, after they'd had a couple of intense episodes, the way they just had, you know, they often would sort of step back and do a standalone episode or two, and in a lot of ways, I mean, the actual number here, it was interesting to see. Kenny Cosgrove from Mad Men, Aaron Staten, you know, getting some guest starring work in his off time, and it's playing this hypnotherapist who, he does seem to actually be able to hypnotize people. So yes, he is a thief and a con man who is playing the role of a hypnotherapist. It's a sort of story that could have easily been a standalone episode in previous seasons, but they wind up just rolling it right into the ongoing HR story, and I think that was a good thing in this case, because the con and hypnotherapy part was stuff that actually I was a little annoyed by, maybe from watching too many episodes of Hustle and Leverage over the last 10 years, but I wound up finding old Hayden the con man to be not that good a con man, and I guess that was sort of in the story, since he's supposed to be sort of blinded by love and trying to go straight, and not necessarily catching on to all the stuff that's going on around him, you know, including, you know, the fact that this antiques dealer he's targeted is in fact connected to HR, because he does know HR when they bring it up, and then certainly the final twist at the end of the seemingly innocent girlfriend, you know, actually playing him, so that the perfect mark of the title was actually the number, so it was still them playing a little bit, as they have been most of the season, with, you know, whether the number's a victim or a perpetrator, and in this case he's certainly both, but that part of the story I just found, you know, far less than compelling, and a little too predictable, the other part of that is, you know, if the idea they managed to that quickly forge a duplicate baseball with the entire 27 murderers row of the Yankees that could actually pass muster, at least momentarily, was, I did find a little silly as well. So, you know, piece of sports memorabilia that, you know, that special with that many signatures, you know, no, you don't just grab, you know, pull out the Sharpie and whip one of those off. But that aside, I mean, aside from a somewhat weak number, certainly all of the stuff with HR kind of saved the episode. I mean, taking the story and then folding it into, you know, Carter's ongoing battle. Similar to the episode with the two teams converging, where, you know, you had Carter and Shaw following their lead, running into Carter, and that rather wonderful moment that exploded the internet temporarily of Reese and Carter doing their fist bump after he checked in with her, which was very nice to see. And basically, I mean, that to me was what kept the episode afloat, was the way it still brought in the ongoing story and pushed that forward. Seeing Carter, meeting with Quinn, and I actually felt, you know, some real tension there, you know, wondering, is she going to give away too much? Is she, you know, this, you know, because it became obvious by the end that, you know, no, she hadn't suspected him. you know, and luckily, you know, Joss's sort of an innate caginess still kept her from tipping her hand too much. Yeah, so I mean, that the way that they're sort of, you know, keeping the ongoing story and just keeping driving that forward in virtually every episode, you know, to me is you know, what made this episode good. So, what did you think? What did you think of our con man?
See, I was a lot more fond of the con man storyline. I mean, I've seen this amount of like leverage and a fair bit of hustle, and I like con man movies and stuff like that. But so, I don't know. I didn't mind that they were playing into that. I enjoy that genre. I liked getting involved with it. And I'll admit, it wasn't until relatively late in the game that I realized that the girlfriend was playing him. But a big thing about con man movies, you know, which themselves are structured to be a lot like the cons that they're about, is that there's a lot of misdirection going on in the middle. And in the sense of, you know, if you look at the con man story being the main story of the episode, there is a lot of misdirection going on in the episode. It's the myth arc stuff with HR and all that. And I like I love the way that they intertwine the two, and how much stuff we got on HR and the development of that storyline. I really got into it. I'm really looking forward to where they take this in the next few episodes. But I was just as engaged with the con man storyline, with the number of the week. I think Aaron Staton is a really solid actor who just did a great job on making a relatively unsympathetic character be charismatic and likable and keep me interested, where not necessarily every actor and every character in that position has done so. So yeah, that seems to be the main difference between our opinions, is that the bit that you weren't too fussed on, I was really into.
Okay. Yeah.
In addition to the bits that you were into.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I do want to clarify that, you know, I do think Aaron Staton, you know, did do a very good job. I will agree with you on that, but I guess it was more from the top. One thing that was bugging me was this whole concept of under hypnosis, getting enough info out of people to be able to hack their accounts. It just seemed to me that it wouldn't necessarily be, you know, be that easy. I mean, you know, I mean, yes, you know, you see the hypnotists on TV, you make people do all sorts of crazy things, but my understanding has always been that, you know, no, I mean, that if it's something that's, you know, sort of more important or sensitive, it's harder to get people to do it, you know, which is presumably why he wasn't just asking for their passwords, you know, straight out. But it just seemed to me that in this day and age, and maybe I'm just naive about people's awareness, and, you know, and that's why they were sticking it into this episode to, you know, remind people that, you know, don't make your passwords too obvious, don't base them on personal data. But with the sort of powerful clients he was dealing with, that, you know, he'd run into roadblocks more often than not, you know, people using password managers and that sort of thing. So I think that was part of what sort of took me out of it at the beginning. The funny thing is, I mean, from the previews of the episode, you know, when they sort of played up Finch being under hypnosis, you know, I really thought that part of the episode was going to, you know, possibly hinge on Finch giving up, you know, giving away too much when he was under hypnosis, and you know, kind of the way that you know, Finch basically just sort of, you know, dismissed it of, you know, oh no, you know, I was just able to you know, just feed him what he wanted to hear. You know, I guess in some ways, I mean, that, you know, that in itself, I mean, kind of diminished the character for me. So, you know, so I think it may have been a case of sort of, you know, there may have been too much outside stuff that I was reading into it, and not just focusing specific, you know, just on what was being presented in the script. You know, so we can agree to disagree on that part, but yeah, I can see, I mean, after, you know, hearing you talk about it, I can see where, you know, maybe I was being a little harsher than necessary, but still overall, all of the stuff with HR and certainly that ending, I mean, I was not expecting, you know, things to escalate that far, that, you know, this quickly. And I thought they wound up, you know, just being a pretty amazing payoff to, you know, that sort of a amazing job they'd already done of turning Lasky from, you know, from this, you know, kind of naive goon into more of a full-fledged character. And then, you know, when he gets killed, it just really had some impact. And certainly, you know, it's of you know, in a way, I kind of like the the mirroring that was going on of where, I mean, you had Lasky basically getting shot for trying to do the right thing. Turney, who has always been the, you know, not that you've seen, you know, sort of cracks in his loyalty, but certainly, you know, compared to the, you know, the good Lieutenant Simmons, you know, Turney always, you know, did seem like the one, you know, who might be a little more susceptible. So, you know, so it did actually make sense of Turney then, you know, literally fingering Quinn right at the end. But it was quite a shocking end to things after, you know, which they've been managing to do quite well in these recent episodes. And as the previews we saw right afterwards, you know, made clear, we had been talking about that they seemed to be ramping up to something during sweeps, and it was kind of like just as we were saying that, in fact, while we were recording that show, they were starting these promos saying that we are now leading into a 3-episode event, and I do hate it when they do this, but with the saying a hero will fall, strongly implying one of the regulars is going to die, and very strongly implying in the footage that it's going to be Fusco, which would really annoy me, and I'm really hoping this is all misdirection. and also it seems a little odd that, you know, you would have had the guy who you're about to send off hardly do anything the last few episodes, but we shall see. And Bronze Thumb, are you still there, or have you fallen asleep while I'm droning on?
No. Still hanging in there.
Anything to add about the way things wound up and what they're about to spring on us?
Well, just that I think it was an episode or two back where I was saying that the way that they're taking Lasky.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope I didn't just bugger the name.
No.
Where they're taking Lasky and the fact that they've done with him in the space of a few episodes, what they did with Fusco over the course of about a season.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm really looking forward to where they're taking that character. And then he's like, they take him out. The second he showed up in that scene, I knew it was going to happen, but it was still shocking, still upsetting. It was a big moment. And it worked really, really well. And I'm really looking forward to where they, how Carter's going to react to this, to a an episode that's sort of, you know, like HR-centric.
Yeah, no, it should be fun to see. And as I said, I have my fingers crossed that they're going to give us something a little more special than the usual send-off to a character. So I know NCIS got some heat for admittedly it was the Coda de Pablo just deciding not to come back, but about the way they handled her departure. So this certainly seems a little more planned, and given this writing staff, I'm sure they're going to give us something special. And so I wound up giving this episode an 8. Even though I had my issues with the con game, certainly what they were setting up with HR and down the road, still made this above average. So what did you think, Bronze Thumb?
I would go up to a 9. I really, really loved the episodic elements. I really loved the story arc elements. They fuse together really well. The show just continues to move at just a brilliant pace, and yeah, I had a ball with it.
Okay. Well, we will take a short break, and then we will be back to discuss some Arrow. All right, and we'll be moving on to Arrow, and here is the promo for that.
The League of Assassins.
Deadly warriors that killed and vanished like ghosts.
There were things that I did to survive. I'm a murderer.
You're one of them.
Step aside or get put down.
You're in real danger.
There's only one way that you leave the League.
This Wednesday at 8, 7 Central on the CW.
Okay, and that is Arrow Season 2, Episode 5, League of Assassins. Oliver and Canary are attacked by a trained killer from the League of Assassins. Meanwhile, the ADA offers Moira a chance of pleading guilty to murder and conspiracy and thereby avoiding the death penalty or taking her chances in court. And, Bronze Thumb, why don't you start us off on this one?
So this was really fun.
Yes, indeed.
For one thing, we got, now for someone completely different in the flashbacks, which was not wholly unexpected, but very, very awesome.
Yes.
Because if I'm not mistaken, they introduced at least one character who's a DC Comics villain. But we got, in the course of telling this story that's very Canary-centric, in the present day about how she's coping with being back in Starling City and whether or not to talk to her family and all that sort of stuff, we found out a lot of things. One of the chief among them, that apparently Malcolm Merl joined the League of Assassins, and that's why he became the super badass Dark Archer. which is basically like a really, really, really good way of doing your villain escalation from season to season. Okay, season one, he's the bad guy. He's such a badass that he's going to run rings around the hero and level half the city. How do we make the next little bad guy seem even more dangerous? Oh, we'll just make season one bad guy a foot soldier.
Yes, and
that can be done poorly, and I don't think this is one of those times.
No, indeed. Not just a foot soldier, but basically, a guy who seems to be considered pretty much a dilettante by the real assassins. So.
Malcolm Miller, he was a weekend warrior.
Yeah. Just one of those rich guys who dabbled in this stuff, He hasn't really lived it the way we have. The guy the League sent, definitely did a great job of sort of projecting that, puny human who thinks he can go up against me, just the way he sort of threw it in his face about, yes, you got Merlin, but you nearly killed yourself in the process, and I'm a bit better than he is, I really liked the way they, sort of melded together. I mean, the whole Arrow and Canary, coming together to start battling things, in the present day, and then the contrast of that with that ending back on the freighter when where you see her in her full assassin, it seems like her full assassin mode, and their previous encounters. So it's definitely teasing, lots of interesting stuff for the backstory as this goes along, and certainly, I mean, we had all the, all of that sort of great comic book action, which they just really seem to have been ramping up this season. But at the same time, I mean, that sort of ongoing thread that's been going on of, since she came back, of Oliver, trying to convince her to, to see her family, to see her sister, see her dad, trying to use his own experience to, let her know that, I mean, it's better to do this than not. And then the way this episode, finally brought that to a head. I mean, I felt like, Paul Blackthorne's been getting a lot more to do this season, and just the character just feels better written, and I felt like this was really his coming out party. I mean, between the very affecting reunion scene when she finally does have to reveal herself, through to that final battle, you know, and him having to come to terms with, you know, no, I really do have to keep the secret. You know, it just was, you know, some really nicely written and, you know, and very nicely acted, you know, family dynamics and, you know, and, you know, character building moments, you know, just, you know, both in terms of, you know, these, you know, these major events they're having to deal with and major emotions they're dealing with. And, you know, yeah, I thought that, you know, that was quite nicely done. You know, while at the same time, I mean, in terms of, you know, yeah, I mean, it eventually comes down to her having to, you know, Sarah having to reveal herself to him. But before that, we still had some of the, you know, the fun Harrow tongue-in-cheek stuff when, you know, when Felicity tries to warn him off. And, you know, yeah, as, you know, as she says, doesn't, you know, probably should have led with something else. But, you know, but it just feels like, you know, on so many levels. I mean, you know, the writing staff has really gotten comfortable with, you know, with the team and the dynamics. And, you know, some of those problems we've had, Gary has been apparently valiantly trying to catch up in those early episodes, was sort of, you know, querying us a little bit about, you know, is it, you know, does it really get better? And we're like, oh, yes, it does. And it was sort of taking me back to those early episodes, you know, when it seemed like, you know, the relationship stuff, you know, or, you know, what you could call the CW stuff was in there and, you know, kind of awkwardly shoehorned in with the comic book stuff. And it just feels like, you know, from there to here, it's, you know, they have just made some huge leaps.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much left there is for me to say, you know. But yeah, it was, I'm totally with you on agreement about things like, Paul Blackthorne, you know, continuing to just be, you know, more and more amazing this season and just having so many brilliant moments in this episode. I mean, like I was saying, this is the Canary-centric episode. This is, she is the protagonist and therefore it's her family, the characters, you know, in her orbit that are the principal supporting characters that we see. I dug that approach. I dug getting to see Starling see from that other angle. I loved giving these actors and these characters a chance to shine in a way that we don't normally get to see. I don't have enough nice things to say about this episode. It was so much fun and so much fun, so well written, so well put together. Such a brilliant way to take a step forward with what a ongoing story is doing while being thoroughly engaging and entertaining in its own right.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, I did realize, I mean, yes, it was a very Canary-centric episode, of course, but actually, I mean, in terms of those family dynamics, I mean, there's one element we hadn't touched on, and that's, you know, the continuing court drama and, you know, and those hints that Moira was dropping about, you know, yeah, basically, you know, wanting to take the deal because she had all these secrets that she doesn't want to come out, and I thought that you know, wound up being another very nice moment, you know, that final scene back in the prison with Oliver and Thea basically, you know, rallying the troops and, you know, and saying, come on, Mom, you know, it's, you know, we're a family. It doesn't matter what, you know, what you did, what may come out. We're going to, you know, just tough this out together. And, you know, we're going to love you no matter what. You know, it was a, you know, another, you know, just nicely written and, you know, and nicely acted scene. You know, Susanna Thompson, I've enjoyed her work, you know, over the years, and, you know, and it's nice to see her, you know, getting a little more to do as well, you know, although, you know, yeah, she obviously, you know, she's kind of on the sidelines at the moment as we wait for this trial to begin, but I'm sure as we get into that, she's going to have her own moments to, you know, to bring it the way everybody else has been. And, yeah, I mean, this was just a, you know, another very, very good outing for Arrow. Nadim over on the website gave this a 9 out of 10. And what do you think, Bronze Thumb?
Happily agree. Very happily.
Yeah, no, I would be right there with you as well. And, let's see. We have a little more time. Anything in particular you want to report from Down Under, or have you been far too busy working?
Yeah, it's been a slightly busy couple of weeks. It's been a slightly busy few months.
Yeah, no.
This past week has basically been week and a half has been me working or me sick or me out of town.
Yeah, no, that's the way life goes sometimes. But as they say, it's better to be busy than not. But I actually had one thing I wanted to mention. You know, from time to time, we have talked about other shows we watch, and I actually had something more of a comment in terms of networks. We've been talking about American Horror Story and the quick hits, and how amazing that's been in this third season, and I was a huge fan of The Americans earlier this year, and very much looking forward to its return coming up, and it was one thing I realized that last 5-6, I guess what's been about Mad Men's been on about 7 years, AMC was the network that everybody was hyping as the one that was, taking the mantle from HBO for good dramas, and but it seems like they've got Breaking Bad has now finished, Mad Men is coming into its final season, of course they do have The Walking Dead, but it feels like AMC is having a little bit of trouble trying to find the series, the couple of series that will carry them on after that. I'd mentioned a while back I had been watching Low Winter Sun, which was the series they put on after Breaking Bad, and it had a pretty rough first season. And certainly ratings-wise, was not that it would have been easy for any new series to hold Breaking Bad's numbers, but it was seeing some drop-offs. And what was ironic about that was in its final episode, it did a big 2-hour double episode event. They actually managed to sort of turn around all the things that were annoying me about the first season. One thing about when you've got a show about bad cops and criminal elements, it's kind of easy to clear the decks, which is what they really did. And just literally killed off all of the elements I found most annoying, including Frank's obsession. I can't really call her his girlfriend. She was his girlfriend in his head. On the criminal side, kept the one criminal who was actually interested and got rid of the other two. And I think that show has some potential if they in fact bring it back. They haven't made an announcement yet. I realized that at this point it looks like FX may be set to sort of pick up the mantle from AMC, but we will have to see if AMC can get anything more in the pipeline, or if they just got really, really lucky with the few shows they picked up there. And obviously they're not hurting. Walking Dead is the ratings powerhouse over on basic cable, so they will they are doing just fine as a business, but in terms of that sort of creative heyday they seem to have, it's going to be interesting to see what comes of it. And anything you feel like adding to in terms of our network situation?
I'm possibly slightly out of the loop.
Yeah.
On some of this stuff.
No, I had a feeling, given the,
A little bit removed.
Yes, yeah, no, but yeah, we will have to see down the road, who winds up being the next creative powerhouse. But I think that will do it for this episode, and we will see you next time.
Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that critical misuse of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...